Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, prevention and treatment of home accidents. Our guest is Dr. Brad Hoover. I'll introduce him in a moment, but first my monologue. Several years ago, our family visited some friends who had a home with lots of woods and open spaces. We thought it would be a great place for our kids to enjoy nature in its own setting. We were wrong. Our friends had three grade school kids, each with their own three-wheel ATC. And our host invited our kids to ride them. I balked because I thought they were too dangerous. So they asked me to try one. You'll like it. I did, and while going up a hill, the front of the cycle lifted and threw me off the back. I was not hurt, but all the boys laughed. Too dangerous for kids, I said. The boys and I hiked the woods instead. We all had a good time. Now, injuries are a leading cause of death in children ages 19 and under, but most children injuries can be prevented. Injury is one of the under-recognized public health problems facing children today. Injury is the number one killer of children and teens in the United States. Murder and suicide are second and third. That's a thought for another day. More than 9,000 youth ages 0 to 19 die from unintentional injuries in the United States each year. Millions more children suffer injuries requiring treatment in the emergency departments. Progress has been made in preventing child injury, and death rates have decreased 29% in the last decade. Yet injury is still the leading cause of death for teens and children of every age. More can be done and should be done to keep our children safe. For example, bicycle helmets reduce the risk of brain and head injuries, so all bicyclists, regardless of age, should protect themselves by wearing properly fitted bicycle helmets every time they ride. While there is no concussion-proof helmet, a helmet can protect your child or yourself from a serious brain or head injury. Now, because three-wheeler ATCs are so dangerous, four-wheelers have become popular, but I'm not sure they are any safer. There has been an increase in the number of ATC-related fatalities every year from 29 deaths in 1982 to 766 deaths in 2007, resulting in 10,281 deaths between 82 and 2009. And the number of four-wheel injuries and accidents every year has tripled since 1992. More than a quarter of all ATV accidents with injuries happen to individuals below the age of 16. And it's no doubt because the average ATV driver is 12.8 years old. Another dreadful statistic is 75% of the total number of ATV accidents and injuries result in debilitating spinal cord and brain injuries. This is really scary considering that the brain and spinal cords are too delicate but very important organs in the body. I have asked Dr. Brad Hoover to discuss them. Our listeners will remember Dr. Hoover as he has had several appearances on this show. Dr. Hoover is an emergency medicine doctor, and his medical degree is from UT. He is currently regional medical director for Envision Physician Services, managing HCA emergency departments in Nashville area and northern Georgia. He is a proud veteran of Desert Shield and Storm. He serves as a board chairman for Small World Ministries, an international adoption agency located in Hermitage, Tennessee. He and his wife live in Brentwood and worship at Holy Family Catholic Church. They have been married for 29 years and have three children. Welcome, Dr. Hoover, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Parr. I'm glad to be here.
I'm sure you have seen your share of ATV accidents. How common are they in the communities you serve?
Well, I would link ATV, I would link them all together, three-wheel, four-wheel. Okay, you mentioned the four-wheel accidents, and I'm going to throw in motorcycles too. They are less common than they used to be, but we still see too many. And I think you hit on it when you mentioned with your story. Okay, you said you and your boys went out to this family, and you know, you guys had probably never been on an ATV before. And so that's what we see, these folks who really don't have a lot of experience with them. You said the average age being 12 years old, which is startling. But these folks get out there on the ATVs, and they don't have experience. And like you say, it flips over backwards when they go into hills, or I really see more of the blunt trauma when they just can't get out of the way of a tree. And as you also alluded to, head injuries are one of the most, you know, troubling things we see, and such ramifications associated.
Well, we're going to just talk about a bunch of different subjects here. Right now, I want to talk about deaths caused by falls. Most of us, even us older people, need to prevent ourselves from falling, because the average person, 75 years old, falls every 3 years. But infants fall too. What kind of injuries do you see in kids falling?
Mostly, Par, it's from a couch or from a bed. Every now and then we see it from a grocery cart in a when the grocery. That can happen. All three of these type of accidents and injuries can happen very, very quickly. I mean, you just don't realize how quick it can happen. The kid can roll over while you're just maybe distracted, or maybe not distracted. They're right there in front of you. But those are the kind of things we see. Usually the falls, and most of the time it's 3 to 4 feet in height, but even that can be problematic. And with the grocery carts, they're a little higher. That can be almost 5 feet sometimes.
They can hurt those little heads, can't they?
You know, you're right. As you know, being a pediatrician, the head is the largest thing on the largest body part on these toddlers. And so it just follows gravity. The head usually goes first, and the rest of the body follows. So, you know, not uncommonly, the head's the first thing that hits the ground.
When we think of emergencies, we often think of people collapsing because of a heart attack or choking on something. Do you think it's a good idea for parents to learn CPR? And if so, where can they go to learn it?
That's imperative. Not only parents, but siblings and babysitters too, because, you know, so a lot of the times the parents are, you know, gone for the night. Well, you know, when the pandemic lifts, they will be again. And your local YMCA and or Red Cross facility can offer that to you. A lot of times the CPR courses are free, and I highly recommend that all family members and sitters make sure the parents know that, ask their sitters if they're CPR qualified. Because a lot of sitters just have no idea what to do in that instance. And that includes things, you may get into this later, CPR, and also can include foreign body ingestions and foreign body aspirations when a kid can swallow just about anything they can put in their mouth.
And they put everything in their mouth.
That's right. I mean, you would think, well, you know, what's the most common thing? Well, you know, what do they eat every day, right? I mean, peanuts, grapes, I think hot dogs. But even things like, we had a kid one time that, I mean, just think about this, that the parents were in a temporary home, or no, they were in a temporary housing, that's what it was, and they didn't have window shades up yet. And so they had some type of blanket covering over the window, held together with tacks, okay, thumbtacks. Well, the kid came up and janked on that window covering. The tacks came out onto the floor, and he swallowed the tack. So, I mean, even things like that, you can't, you know, be prepared for everything, but you have to be alert and be ready to act.
Well, one of the most interesting things I saw related to that was when I was in the Air Force back in those days, we had diaper pins. And this lady was babysitting her grandson, and she was changing the diaper, and of course took the diaper off and put the end of the diaper in her mouth, and put the other one in her mouth, and then she put the diaper on, she sneezed, and she swallowed both pins.
Ow.
3 days later, they came out.
Goodness.
She says they almost had a hemorrhoidectomy.
I'll bet.
I've seen so many kids when I do military physicals who have big scars on their face, burn scars on their face and neck and shoulders. And there's only one thing that causes that: hot water or hot coffee or hot grease being dumped from the stove. Have you seen these, and how should parents react to prevent them? And if they do have it, how should they treat that patient, the kid?
Well, as with anything with these kids, it can happen in a flash, okay? And the most common thing we see, hot water, yes, but also hot grease, I guess, is more common. These, folks are cooking, bacon or sausage or what have you, in a skillet, right? And the toddler comes up and just reaches up because he doesn't know any better and grabs the handle of the skillet and pulls it on top of himself. And, immediately we're looking at second degree burns with the blisters, face and usually up in the upper chest area as well. And the most immediate thing to do is just take a wet washcloth or a wet paper towel and just apply that to the burns and get to an ER immediately, because that needs treatment. May need burn center treatment at Vanderbilt. So if you have any burn at all in a child and you're worried about anything more than just a sunburn or just a minor burn, I would take them to the burn center at Vanderbilt. They are well equipped to take care of anything like that.
Do they have, they should go to an emergency room somewhere first, though, to get that referral? They can't just
correct, or they can correct. I'm just saying, if they're in their vicinity of Vanderbilt, they can just go straight to the Vanderbilt emergency room, and they'll be right there. But you're right. The closest emergency room is always the best answer.
What about hot water burns from showers and tubs and scalds like that? Are you still seeing them?
Not as much. When we see that, we have to be concerned. I know this is probably a topic for another day, but you mentioned scalding accidents, and if you see in certain patterns, then you have to worry about non-accidental trauma, and that's something that maybe a parent might see something and might notice. Maybe a kid that they don't know that well or whatever. If they ever see a kid out somewhere in a at a store and they see a stocking glove. It looks like they, it's like you imagine a hand with a stocking glove on top of it. Okay. It means the hand was immersed purposefully into a hot water bath or what have you. And that can cause that type of burn. So we always have to look for that, but it's usually pretty easy to figure out if it's something that was not accidental. But we don't see that much more anymore. I much more commonly see kitchen scald burns from cooking.
Of course, most of us have turned our hot water temperature down quite a bit, too, and I think that's made a big difference.
Right.
Well, next thing I want to talk a bit about is prevention of sunburn. Now, we encourage our kids to play outside, but when they go outside without a shirt, they come back in with sunburn. And how should a parent treat that sunburn?
Well, I will say that, I agree. It's important to be outside and to try to prevent, which is, an ounce of prevention never plays as well as it does with sunburn. Because, the kids do need the vitamin D that's associated with sunlight. And, of course, the pluses of getting outside and playing, like they should do. But once the sunburn occurs, say they went to a water park or, a beach or somewhere like that where you may not realize how burned you're getting, the aloe solution is the best, over-the-counter cream you can do, aloe vera, which you can get over, at anywhere over-the-counter. So I would highly recommend aloe vera. It has a soothing effect. And ibuprofen really helps too. You don't think about taking something, orally for it, but it does. I would highly recommend ibuprofen or Aleve or one of the anti-inflammatories to help with the discomfort.
So should parents have some aloe vera cream in their medicine kit? And if so, what other kind of things should parents have in their first aid kit or medicine kit?
Aloe vera is a must. As I mentioned, I would do something like Tylenol and or Aleve or ibuprofen, you know, in the liquid form if it's a toddler, you know, just, you know, age appropriate. Certainly any type of, you know, gauze and bandages. Now, Band-Aids, of course, but I also want to get gauze. You got to, like, if there's bleeding going on, you know, that the gauze is nothing. There's nothing better to stop bleeding, and be it from a wound or from a nosebleed or whatever. So gauze and antibiotic ointment is a must as well. So those things is what I keep in my home kit.
You don't have a suture kit at home?
No, I have a stapler somewhere, but I've got glue now. Medical super glue is the next best thing, right? And so I've got a few of those laying around.
Sometimes it's a whole lot better.
That's right.
We see a lot of kids with accidental poisoning too. Babies especially put everything in their mouths, and they can choke on them, like you mentioned before, or they can put somebody else's medicine in their mouth or pills that they find around. Flat batteries, soap packets, all those things can cause serious injuries and even death. Can you talk just a little bit about the soap thing and vaping solutions and flat batteries and that kind of things? What kind of problems do they cause, and how do we recognize it?
Well, you touched on it. Now, when you say flat batteries, you're referring to the button batteries, right? And that's what they're called. You know that you see them. They're used, those flat batteries, used in various items these days. And those items are small enough to where it can lodge in a kid's esophagus, and it just causes a burning, and it will burn right through the esophagus. It can be horrendous. They have to be immediately evaluated to see if, in fact, if it did pass. Now, if it gets into the stomach, it will pass all the way through. But if it lodges in the esophagus, that's a medical emergency, you know, number one. It has to be taken out by a GI specialist. The other things you mentioned, the soap package. Now, you're referring to the dishwater packets, right, that made by Tide or whatever. And they, you know, they're nice colors. They're blue and they're green and they're whatever. And the kids are so drawn to those things. They look at that color and they think, oh, yeah, it's like a party. Let's have a party. And there's also, that's not the only thing that's out there. I just had a communication from Vanderbilt Poison Control the other day of something called water beads, BEADS, water beads. Again, they're even smaller than these soap packets, and they're of various colors, you know, red and green and blue. And again, a kid can put that in their mouth and swallow it. And again, it won't cause any damage per se, but it, you know, you don't want to worry about choking and aspiration primarily. If it goes down into the windpipe, into the lungs, then that's trouble.
What are the water beads intended for?
Oh, decorations and, you know, put in your aquarium or terrarium if you have one of those. Or, you know, I think there's a 2021 version of Pet Rocks, to be honest with you. Water beads is what they're called. Yeah.
That good, huh?
Oh, I'm telling you, they're all over.
Well, what about how do parents prevent like medication abuse and not necessarily abuse, but accidental ingestion of kids, and adding those vaping solutions too? I think we're pretty, have you seen any poisonings from them?
I've not seen any poisons from vaping solutions as much. You know, that's really, of course, they're still out there. I've read more about the marijuana pediatric ingestions. You know, the states that have legalized recreational marijuana have seen, you know, multiple percentage increases in kids presenting to ERs and to poison control center evaluations because of marijuana ingestion. You sprinkle marijuana on just about anything, brownies, you know, what, and kids get a hold of that. And next thing you know, there's a poisoning going on. So, you know, the same thing happened with vaping. Of course, the nicotine is the evil there, and that can cause, you know, cardiac effects, and that needs to be addressed, you know, immediately. You mentioned medications. Generally, we will find that kids will get into their grandparents' medications, believe it or not. They're usually the ones on blood pressure medicines and the diabetes medicines, which, you know, one pill of a certain one of those conditions can cause death in a child. So, you know, the grandparent may may leave it out, or, you know, and that's what we usually see in this day and age.
I wish I weren't guilty of that, but we don't have any children, and right. I always put the pill bottles come with a childproof side on the cap and a regular side. I always use the regular cap. We don't have any kids around here, you know. And right. My wife, she takes hers with her food, so she leaves a bunch of them on the table every day, and she just takes them from the table. And
right.
Fortunately, we don't have any kids around. Our youngest grandson is 19, and he takes the pills. He's looking for something else, but we don't have that kind of grandkids, thank God.
Right.
But the other thing, a lot of toys that kids have, the stuffed toys, are stuffed with little pieces of foam, little foamy stuff. And I've seen kids shove them up their nose and beads up the kid's nose. And I remember seeing a boy came into my office, new patient on Saturday morning. It's all he liked to see. And we weren't supposed to have any of that, but this kid came in. His mom insisted I see her because she had heard good things about me. And she had a little kid who I walked in there and I smelled him. I could smell it from across the room. I said, Mom, before we get started, I just got to do one thing. I said, your kid's got something up his nose. And I reached up there and took this little piece of maybe a centimeter square of foam out of his nose. And Mom just sat there and she says, I've been to 3 doctors with this kid stinking like that. She's, and nobody knew what it was. So right. If you find your kid has terrible, terrible breath and a little runny nose, sometimes they even get infection in it. Something, look for foam in the kid's nose. Is with flat batteries or the button batteries, it's called, don't they contain cadmium or something else too that's poisonous?
Yes, cadmium or whatever the element is. But again, the main problem, it may be the cadmium that does it. Whatever it is, the burning of the esophagus is the huge issue here. Wherever it may lodge, sometimes it lodges more in the neck. That part of the esophagus, or you know, and obviously can go down to trachea as well into the windpipe. But most of the times they lodge right at the junction of the esophagus and the stomach, and you can't get past the esophageal sphincter there. So it just lodges right at the bottom of the esophagus, and it can be just a disaster. So those things need to be addressed. And you know, the problem is, and I think you know this, I know, but. You know, a lot of times with these ingestions or these aspirations, you don't know that it happened. You know, the kid just may start vomiting or complain of severe abdominal pain or have a cough that won't clear up if they happen to aspirate something into their lungs that's kind of small like a peanut, or maybe start wheezing, for a few days and never had asthma before. So any type of new symptoms like that, respiratory or certainly GI or gastric, it deserves an evaluation and for something that you may not even seen happen.
You know, a few years ago, I gave a kid doxycycline or tetracycline, I guess it was doxy, for acne. Mm-hmm. And he went on a vacation up north someplace and he took him one night and he woke up about 10 o'clock with terrible, terrible chest pain, burning in his chest. And I took him to the emergency room and of course he had an erosion of his esophagus from the doxycycline. So right. I always remember, if you're taking those pills, be sure to have the kids drink plenty of water. So that's another clue for parents. But right. Now we come to one of the most difficult topics, guns. You know, I was in the habit each time I saw a family, I would ask them if they have guns and if they're kept safe and if they have kids have had training and the parents have safety training. And I'm sensitized to that because I have, I think, 7 or 8 brothers-in-law. And one of them, when he was in high school, came home from school one day and found the ambulance there and the police and everything else. And everybody in the house was in panic because someone of his brothers, and I think he had more brothers than I have sisters, which I think is 7. And one of his brothers had gone hunting and came home and left the gun in the dining room, leaning against the table while he did what he was supposed to do. Mm. And the sister came over home and she saw it and she picked the gun up and says to her sister, I'm going to shoot you, bang! And she shot and killed her sister.
Jesus gracious.
7 years old. So I'm sensitive to that. What about guns? What should we do about guns? I don't mean to be political here, but I mean this is a medical problem.
Right. You know, I grew up with guns, and you know, a lot of folks in the South did, and so I don't have any, you know, biases against or for it. But I don't think there's anything wrong with asking the parents in a general way when you go when they come in for an evaluation. You know, are there guns in the home? Yes. Okay. How do you store them? And generally they're going to say, you know, the responsible gun owner will have no problem answering that question. They'll say, you know, I keep my gun and my ammo separate in a locked cabinet, you know, or et cetera. And, you know, they know what to do. So that's the question I think that, you know, that needs to be asked. And like I say, a responsible owner will have no problem answering that. It's the ones that are not responsible that you got to be worried about. You know, that's one of the first questions we ask as well. And I know, again, this is not a topic for this show, maybe a future show, for the depression that we see in these adolescents, which, you know, don't get me started on what we're seeing because of all the social media that they're on. But nonetheless, the depression has really skyrocketed in these kids. And you know, having a gun in the home is a major risk factor for suicide. It is. Just the fact that there is a gun in the home. It don't mean that the kid's going to get it, but, you know, you don't know what can happen late one night when everybody's gone to bed and the depression really sets in. So for multiple reasons, I think it's a great idea just to ask the question, to ensure that things are being kept safely.
Good. Well, thank you so much. We're about out of time already. And thank you so much for being on our show and spending this time with us. And thanks, too, to you, our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't exist. You are listening to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Before we sign off, one last story. One afternoon when one of our sons was about 4 months old, he was napping in his crib. Mary, my wife, walked past his room and thought, he should be awake by now. So she poked her head into his room. There he was, lying in bed, blue and limp as a rag. She picked him up and saw that he was not breathing. Without panicking, she turned him on his belly over her forearm and patted his back really hard. A star flew out of his mouth and crashed onto the floor. He started to cry, and in a few seconds, he was pink and his normal self. She said for the first time in her life, she was glad to hear him cry. Then she put him down and removed the cow jumping over the moon mobile, which was dangling with one fewer star above his head. She reasoned that he was able to reach out and grab one of the stars, pull it off, and put it in his mouth. Now, he was a lucky boy. A minute or so later, he would have been dead. He and all of our family are so blessed that Mary knew what to do, and she did it. That also teaches us that mothers save more lives than doctors. Now, for your homework, get your family together. Go to www.parenting-matters.com and listen to the show again with them. Then review the safety in your home with your family. Then decide what changes you must make to avoid injuries described. Finally, go back to www.parenting-matters.com. Click on homework and tell us about your family's discussion. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We will find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.